Is it time for a name shift? If you don't know what that means, then join me, your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, on the Dismantling Doctrine podcast. Formerly known as the Mind Shift podcast, it's time for a change. And if you're someone who's looking to rebuild their life after dismantling whatever doctrine may have controlled you, then this show is for you. I am super excited to be touching base once again with Jenny Cohn, who does a lot of writing for the Bucks County Beacon. So welcome, Jenny, to the newly named Dismantling Doctrine podcast.
Hi, great to see you.
Yeah, I was trying to think when we actually did our episode, and I went back and looked in the archives the other day. It was like 3 years ago, at least a couple, 3 years ago. I'm like, wow. I mean, I know. But obviously, we just said before we hit record, we are doing a lot of the same thing. Reporting on Christian nationalism, the Christian right, dominion theology, new apostolic reformation, seven mountains mandate. I mean, so we are very much sort of companions in that sort of journey, I think, aren't we?
It sure seems that way.
Yeah. Why are you so concerned about this stuff? I mean, you got the election coming up. Trump could win. Is that sort of your biggest concern?
Yes, but not for the reasons that I think a lot of people are concerned. I'm very concerned about him empowering these Christian nationalists, Christian extremists, who have an agenda that I don't think has been adequately explained to voters. So the voters don't really understand fully the implications of what a second Trump term would mean in terms of really facilitating this sort of Christian fundamentalist takeover of not just our judiciary, but what they call the administrative state, the federal agencies.
Mm-hmm. And of course, in a way, they've already done that. This is really interesting because I'm nearly finished. I don't know if you've read this book. It's by Francis Fitzgerald. It's called The Evangelicals, The Struggle to Shape America. It's a few years old now. It's a massive book.
I haven't read it.
But she does a huge job. She goes right back. She starts out with, you know, Jonathan Edwards and George Whitefield, the First Great Awakening. She goes right back to the beginning. But she has a big, huge section on the Christian right, sort of the formation of the Christian right. And one of the things I didn't realize is back in the 1990s, Dr. James Dobson, you know, Focus on the Family, Family Research Council.
Evangelical.
Yeah, hardline evangelical, hugely influential politically and all that. He said something to the effect back in the 1990s, we can't go after the courts. We can't do anything about the courts. You know, we're stuck with what we've got. And that agenda has completely changed. I mean, that's not true anymore of the Christian right. In a way, they did win when they got these three Supreme Court justices, as well as a number of lower benches too, didn't they? So that strategy is terrifying, isn't it?
It is terrifying. And I think what we're seeing and what makes it a little bit tricky to kind of keep up with is a coalition. The Christian right is a coalition of at least three factions, which is the Catholic fundamentalists. Mm-hmm. And that sort of started back in the day, maybe it was really in the 80s with Paul Weyrich. Was a Catholic fundamentalist leader who tried to form this coalition. And he had the brilliant, I mean, I could say diabolically brilliant, but the idea of bringing in evangelicals. And he wanted the evangelicals brought into the fold in part because they already have what almost pre-made political rallies. They have these revival events, these massive revival events, and this messaging machine that goes along with that. Mm-hmm. And that would make them a very powerful ally. They actually didn't see eye to eye on abortion particularly. So the Catholic fundamentalists were more extreme than the evangelicals at the time, back in the 80s and maybe the 90s and maybe the 70s, actually. I guess.
Yeah, late 70s.
Really is in the 70s. And so the Catholics always opposed abortion, but a lot of evangelical leaders apparently didn't. They actually supported the Roe decision, or they didn't really care much about the Roe decision. And Weyrich was frustrated because he was trying to bring them into this coalition and they weren't interested really in abortion. What got them interested was they blamed this on Carter. I don't even think that was really correct. But the effort of the federal government to take away the tax-exempt status of Christian schools mm-hmm. that were segregating. And that was, according to Weyrich himself, that was what brought this coalition together. And then later on, because that wasn't a very appealing message to say that we're, you know, opposed to integrating schools.
Yeah. We're racist. And Christians.
Exactly. He was really a messaging genius, and he understood that they have to have a moral facade for whatever it is that helps. And so they used abortion. They got the evangelicals on board to use that as their moral crusade to give them reality crying. And so in any event, the Project 2025 and the takeover of the courts and just sort of the January 6th can be kind of confusing because, you know, you'll think for a while I was like, it's all about the new apostolic reformation. It's all about the new apostolic reformation. I'm like, no, it's not all about the new apostolic reformation. It's also all about Southern Baptist Convention, the evangelicals in the largest evangelical denomination in the U.S. And their overlap maybe a little bit with the NAR, but not really. The NAR is more new apostolic reformation, is non-denominational, even though a lot of the leaders came from an evangelical background. They're technically, and they're more charismatic.
Yeah, I would say charismatic. They're more the Seven Mountains Mandate crowd and all that.
The Seven Mountains Mandate people. And so it's, then there's like this whole hardline Southern Baptist Convention type of people, both of them Dominionists, though, people who believe they have a mandate from God to take over all of our society. And then with Project 2025, I'd kind of put the Catholic fundamentalist on the back burner until reporting really by Heidi Prisbola at Politico reminded me that Leonard Leo, who is Catholic fundamentalist, he seems to be the one, well, he's the one who really spearheaded the takeover of the Supreme Court. And most of those justices aren't evangelical. They're Catholic.
Yeah, they're Catholic. Amy Coney Barrett, Catholic. Well, good. She's a part of a cult, really, but they didn't touch on that when she was, that's a whole other story, isn't it?
It's a whole other story, but they're not just Catholic. They're extreme Catholics. Yeah. They're extremists. And it appears that he's funding, based on her reporting and some other reporters reporting, that Leonard Leo not only orchestrated the takeover of the Supreme Court, but he's also one of the ones that's funding a lot of the organizations that are behind Project 2025, which is targeting the federal agencies. And importantly, I really think what hasn't received enough attention is the FDA. That they want to take over, that's one of the agencies. And now, of course, you know, if they take away FDA approval of the abortion pill right now, for example, which is expressly in Project 2025.
Oh, yeah.
But the stuff that they're not saying is they could do the same thing with contraception, which they're claiming is carcinogenic and toxic. And so anyway, that was a long tirade. But really seeing this synthesis of the different, it's the NAR and the Catholic fundamentalists and the evangelical extremists really converging together to create, I think, an unprecedented crisis for our country, and most voters are completely in the dark about it.
That's true. Yeah. I was doing some research just before we talked. I've been doing reading on this for a while, but I've got like 10 tabs open off my computer. And obviously you've got an article that came out, I think just a few weeks back in early March of 2024 on the Project 2025. So I went on their website. Now, what this is supposedly they call it a presidential transition project. It's like a blueprint, as I understand it, for, like, let's say they're not specifically saying, oh, Donald Trump is our man, but clearly these guys are MAGA supporters. They say on their website, it says, quote, the 2025 presidential transition project, which is founded by the Heritage Organization or Heritage Foundation. They say it paves the way for an effective conservative administration based on four pillars: a policy agenda, presidential personnel database, presidential administration academy, and a playbook for the first 180 days of the next administration. So the minute Trump gets into power, they're saying this is the blueprint. They're just going to hand him the playbook. Here you go, sir. And he's away, off and running. Is that pretty much how you see it as well?
That is how I see it. And I think what had been insufficiently reported, and probably I'd say still is that there's 100 organizations that have signed on to this. Heritage Foundation and most of these organizations are led by, well, many of them, I'm guessing most, maybe all, are led by Christian fundamentalists, Christian extremists.
Mm-hmm.
And that has not received enough attention. Oftentimes, especially at the beginning, they were just described as conservatives or Republicans. And there was a lot more attention to sort of the authoritarian aspects of taking away the Department of Justice's independence from the executive branch so that Trump, if he gets in office, could exert retribution against his political enemies, stick the Department of Justice on whoever he wants. That's all really important. But I actually think what will decide the next election is women, or could decide the next election, is women's rights, and women's rights in particular to reproductive health care. And it's very relevant, the worldview of the people behind Project 2025 on those issues. Because they all pretty much, it seems to me that almost all of them oppose abortion without exception.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I was going to say they're even talking about banning it by mail. So you get any so-called abortion pill, that would not only be illegal, but anyone who's caught sending someone an abortion pill would be potentially prosecuted. So that's how extreme they are.
That's right. And that's, of course, just the abortion pill.
Yeah.
Which I guess had become more popular because of the ruling overturning Roe.
Exactly. So there's a loophole. They found a loophole.
We want to nip that in the bud. But there's this symmetry that's happening where the Supreme Court today, I don't know how it turned out, but they heard oral argument on the case trying to ban mifepristone, which is the abortion pill. But so that's Leonard Leo's Supreme Court is deciding that case. And then they have a fallback, which is the same network is behind Project 2025, which wants to take over the FDA and had a provision in it about removing FDA approval of mifepristone or banning it through the mail. It had both. And so there's a symmetry, I think, between the attack on the courts and then they have the fallback plan, which is an attack on the FDA for a lot of these issues, health and human services overall. And this would, of course, apply, again, like I said, to contraception, with which hardline Catholics oppose contraception. And so do a lot of at least the evangelical extremists involved with Project 2025. They oppose it too.
Yeah.
So for different reasons.
It's a rogues gallery because, I mean, you look at some of the names behind this thing. You talk about Leonard Leo. There's a William Wolfe. There's, there's some of these major players. One of the things you talked about in your article that really hit me, William Wolfe, what he said it was a Newsweek article, I think he wrote, or no, it's in the manifesto. They have a manifesto, and it said he wrote, quote, our purpose is to affirm the church is to instruct civil authorities regarding their identity and duties as servants before the throne of Christ. We affirm this duty is a Great Commission issue. Then he says, under the heading Big Picture, you write, the manifesto claims to, quote, affirm that this Christian nationalist project entails national recognition of essential Christian orthodoxy as a Christian consensus under Jesus Christ, Supreme Lord of King of Creation. And this is what struck me here. He goes on to say, and the establishment of the general equity of the Ten Commandments as the foundational law of the nation, end quote. That is straight out of R.J. Rushdoony and Christian Reconstruction. That is exactly what R.J. Rushdoony argued. And these guys are trying to put it into place in this current or coming election.
Right. So William Wolfe is an example of a Southern Baptist Convention trained. I don't think he's a pastor, but he came out. He studied.
He went to their seminary, didn't he?
He went to their seminary.
Yeah.
So he's a co-editor of it's called The Statement on Christian Nationalism. And the person there are two authors, but one of the two has made some headlines. His name is Dusty Devers, and he is a state senator who wants to charge women with homicide for having abortion. So he's an author, which the manifesto does, I call it a manifesto, The Statement on Christian Nationalism also does call abortion homicide. And the reason I found it was because Heidi Prisbolo at Politico about a month ago had done a really important piece talking about a Project 2025 leader named Russ Voigt, evangelical, who leads the Center for Renewing America. And one of their fellows, at least until recently, had been William Wolfe. And she had obtained somehow an internal memo from the Center for Renewing America, which talked about making Christian nationalism. That was the word that they used. So this isn't coming
out loud. Yeah, their words. Yeah. They said the quiet part out loud. Whoops.
Exactly. And so there was an internal memo saying that was going to be one of their priorities for the next Trump administration. And then she also noted that on social media, Russ Voigt, who is a co-author also of Project 2025, he wrote one of the chapters, that he had said on social media that he was proud to work with William Wolfe on scoping out a sound Christian nationalism. Again, his words, not from the left. So this really it did a couple things. It exposed the Christian fundamentalism that had been really flying under the radar that's fueling Project 2025. And it also put to rest the idea that the Christian nationalism label is a smear coming, you know, was concocted by the left as a smear against the right. There's a group that calls themselves that, and they are involved with Project 2025. And so I started looking at William. They started attacking her, to make a long story short. There was like this coordinated smear attack against the Politico reporter. And I started thinking, my God, she must have been. I mean, she really was over the mark, clearly, because it seemed very coordinated. They parked a mobile billboard outside her office. There are all these articles started coming out from publications I've never heard of. But so I started looking into William Wolfe, and I started listening to his interviews on YouTube, and he mentioned a statement on Christian nationalism. And he gave the URL. So I went and looked it up, and I was horrified. And that's when I wrote the article.
Yeah, it is frightening.
It matters. He's because he flies so close to Project 2025. And that's the thing. So it's not like it won't affect people. This appears to be the ideology, or at least close to the ideology, of leaders of Project 2025 who want to choose who will run the federal agencies, what's left of them after they decimate.
Yeah, they're going to have loyalty tests, basically, personnel. That's one of the four platforms, isn't it? A new personnel policy. And by that, they mean, from what I read it, they're saying, okay, from now on, anyone, let's say Trump gets elected, anyone who's currently a civil servant working in the government, he or she can have a sort of a loyalty test administered, or an ideology test. If you don't pass that test, you could be fired. And then those who are potential new hires must agree essentially to this statement or this ideology, and then they'll be hired. They won't hire anyone who says, no, I don't believe that Christian nationalism. This is all a bunch of, you know, they're out of there. So this is a new sort of twist to the whole thing, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, I don't know that they're going to put the statement of Christian nationalism in front of their employees, but I think you can get a pretty good idea from the worldview of the people that are leading this, of the type of people that they would put to staff. Health and Human Services and the FDA, they would be hardline anti-contraception, anti-abortion, because that's their views. And I don't want to forget to point out that I think a lot of this is coming from a worldview that is rooted in biblical patriarchy, which is the idea that the Bible puts the man as the leader of the household and that the woman is supposed to submit to his authority. And I think that explains in part why there's so much opposition, for example, to contraception, is because that they see contraception, and they may be right about this, as having freed up women to not just be homemakers, not just be wives, but to work outside the home and have professional career outside the home. And they see that as a bad thing. And so I think that, for example, one of the co-editors on that statement of Christian nationalism is a guy named Joel Webon. And he has actually tweeted that he thinks that the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote, is a bad idea. I don't think the women's suffrage is on the ballot this next election, but I honestly do think, like, if we continue on this trajectory, that there will be a movement that direction. Because where there's a lot of social media chatter about household voting, which is the idea that you don't technically take away the women's right to vote, but there's one vote per household, and then the husband is the final say if there's a disagreement.
Exactly. I was going to say that. I know we're going to get to Doug Wilson and all that, but I did a huge deep dive into him last year, and some of the more extreme biblical patriarchy ones, like you say, their argument is, there's two votes in a household. There's the man and the woman, but the woman votes exactly as the husband tells her to vote. So her vote does count, you know, politically, but it's exactly, And some would say women shouldn't work outside the home. Women shouldn't, you know, do anything but domestic chores and all those kind of things. So yeah, the real diehard biblical patriarchy figures. One of the things that struck me was when I read their statement on Christian nationalism, I was expecting the whole typical storyline of, you know, America was founded as a Christian nation. We've strayed from that. We've got to get back. That's not what it's about. They're saying, look, we have a very specific definition of Christian nationalism. We're going to disagree with some others. Some will disagree with us. But what they're saying is it's about constructing a nation whereby the civil laws are founded on the principles of scripture, or a quote unquote biblical worldview. Yeah. And that's what hit me. You know, you got Mike Johnson, the GOP Speaker of the House. I mean, that's what he said, isn't it? What's your worldview? Well, read the Bible. And that'll tell you what it is. You know, so he's one of these biblical worldview types, isn't he? as well as having associations with the New Apostolic Reformation and, you know, Lance Wallnau and other people.
Well, there, I think there has been a lot of panic among these, the Christian right, about the headway that has been made on sounding the alarm about Christian nationalism. They haven't been able to completely drown it out and talk about it. Like, they have been very, very concerned about the headway that's been made with Christian nationalism. And so what they've tried to do, and especially they tried to do after Heidi Prisbola went on MSNBC, is they tried to claim that everyone, most Christians are Christian nationalists. If you, they tried to come up with it and say that it's a smear on all Christians, that this is just mainline Christianity. And the statement on Christian nationalism being so tied to the people who are attacking Heidi, who are all involved with Project 2025. So leading the charge, for example, was Tony Perkins at the Family Research Council, a very hardcore evangelical extremist. This statement on Christian nationalism really puts to rest the idea that this is mainstream Christianity. And I think that that is what the public doesn't realize. There are many Christians in the United States, but very, very few of them share the worldview of the people who've captured the Republican Party and captured these think tanks and these institutions. And that is just not widely known. So, for example, the Family Research Council I mentioned, they're a major leader of Project 2025. Tony Perkins said in an interview that I found, according to their own study, only 9% of Christians share their biblical worldview, because they have a very literal, extreme interpretation of the Bible and how they want people to live their lives. So this is not the people who have captured the think tanks and really captured the GOP. They do not represent even, they represent only a tiny fraction of even Christians in America. This will shock people if these people get power, what's going to happen to our country.
Exactly.
Because it's not what even Republican Christians want.
Yeah, it's really extreme. And then there's also the added issue of Donald Trump himself, Donald Trump the man. Here's a guy that's just said the other day, there's going to be bloodshed if I don't win. You know, oh, it was in the context of him talking about cars, banning cars from China coming through Mexico. I mean, no, he was talking about there will be literal violence if I do not win. We already know his MAGA followers are, they don't accept the legitimate election results anyway. They're still pissed off about 2020, aren't they? They still think Biden's not the president, Trump won, and, you know, it's all bullshit and all that. But this thing about the Project 2025, I mean, I was looking through their manifesto. My God, when you break it down into the constituent parts, you've got a statement on abortion, a census citizenship question, Christian nationalism, which we talked about, climate policy, economy, expansion of presidential powers, curtailing LGBTQ plus rights, mass deportation of immigrants, outlawing pornography, and personnel. So that we talked about that in the new administration.
Actually, I'm glad you brought up pornography. This is really important. Well, actually, go ahead and finish what you were saying.
No, that was it. I mean, we could break down, we could look at each one of those, but when you go in and look at each of the statements of the manifesto, it's like, my God. And one of the people that wrote, I think he wrote the section on immigration, is Stephen Miller, who was a former Trump nutcase. I mean, this guy is a piece of work, Stephen Miller. So he's talking about rounding up immigrants and shipping them back to wherever they came from. So yeah, what were you going to say about pornography?
Well, I read a recent article, and I wish I knew, remembered who the journalist was, but it had to do with that provision on pornography in Project 2025, and that most people will see that, and they might disagree with it. It talks about banning pornography. They might disagree with it, but it's not even exactly what they think. It's what they think, but more, because evangelicals, and probably the Christian fundamentalists as well, define pornography as including anything that can be interpreted as supporting the LGBTQ community. So when they talk about banning it, it has much broader implications than I think people realize. And you mentioned the bloodbath and all that. I think the other thing that has really flown under the radar is the extent to which these Christian nationalists are militant, the ones who are behind Project 2025 and who have really have control over the GOP. I mean, they are, almost without exception, quite militant. So when you talk, a lot of times the definition of Christian nationalism is kind of stated blandly as, we believe that our country is a Christian nation, which I believe is false, but putting that aside, we believe our country is a Christian nation and that we should take steps to bring it back to those roots. That sounds kind of bland, but the thing is, with the Christian nationalists that are really behind Trump and that are behind the GOP and that have purposely trained to take over our government, they believe in taking militant steps to make us a supposedly Christian nation at supposedly again. And so you have like the Black Robe Regiment, which is a militant pastors group where they say that they're willing to die for the cause. And you have William Wolfe, who says that it's almost time for Christians to take up arms. And you have the Family Research Council, whose vice president has said that, you know, Jesus, when he returns, will be carrying an assault rifle. And
yeah,
it kind of goes, you have Michael Flynn, right? Really. And I think that with the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, largely in prison because of January 6th, that militant Christian extremists are going to play that much more of an important role in this campaign for Trump and whatever the aftermath will be if Trump loses, what they plan to do about it is that he's going to try to stoke another January 6th type of event. His foot soldiers this time, I mean, they were there last time too, the Christian extremists, but this time he really needs them even more.
When we come back in the second half in this conversation with Jenny Cohn, we're going to be getting even more into Project 2025, looking at this really a dystopian vision of the future. What would it look like if Donald Trump were to win the presidency this November? It's very frightening. In fact, if you haven't come across this, there's a really good article that came out just the other day in Time magazine by Eric Cortellesa, the 30th of April, 2024, and it's called If He Wins. And as I read through this article, it struck me that this is everything that I did on my previous episode on Project 2025, everything that Jenny and I are talking about in this episode. In fact, I'm going to take a minute here and just read a long paragraph from this article. And this is exactly, you'll see, this lines up with everything we're saying. What Eric Cortellesa says in his Time article is, quote, "What emerged in two interviews with Trump and conversations with more than a dozen of his closest advisors and confidants were the outlines of an imperial presidency that would reshape America and its role in the world. To carry out a deportation operation designed to remove more than 11 million people from the country, Trump told me, he would be willing to build migrant detention camps and deploy the U.S. military, both at the border and inland. He would let red states monitor women's pregnancies and prosecute those who violate abortion bans. He would, at his personal discretion, withhold funds appropriated by Congress, according to top advisors. He would be willing to fire a U.S. attorney who doesn't carry out his order to prosecute someone breaking with the tradition of independent law enforcement that dates from America's founding. He is weighing pardons for every one of his supporters accused of attacking the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, more than 800 of whom have pleaded guilty or have been convicted by a jury. He might not come to the aid of an attacked ally in Europe or Asia if he felt that country wasn't paying enough for its own defense. He would gut the U.S. Civil Service, deploy the National Guard to American cities as he sees fit, close the White House Pandemic Preparedness Office, and staff his administration with acolytes who back his false assertion that the 2020 election was stolen," end quote. And although that is a frightening quote, that is the way it's going to be, and this lines up with everything I did in my episode on Project 2025. And again, as you'll see, we've already been talking about it in the first half. In the second half, we're going to get into even more of what Project 2025 is all about and some of the really scary, truly concerning parts of this thing going forward. Just wanted to mention what's coming up here in the next few episodes here on the newly named Dismantling Doctrine podcast. And in fact, I need to say something about that. I've been talking a while about renaming the show, and so now it has finally happened. There were just too many podcasts out there with the name Mind Shift, everywhere from education shows to pastors, churches, other ex-evangelicals like me, so I was getting lost in the mix, and I feel that this new name really represents exactly what this is all about. Nothing's really going to change in terms of the content, the focus, the guests that I'm going to have, but we need to dismantle doctrine, everything from cult psychology to political stuff, so that is really what the show is about. So I feel like it's a very apt name. Thank you to all the people who helped me come up with a new name, did a lot of research, a lot of talking to people in our closed Facebook group, as well as on our Patreon page. So this is the new name of the show going forward. But I had a conversation with my good friend, Dr. Sherry Palace. I'm going to shove that one in because this is all about her new book, We Have Ruined God. And this is a fantastic conversation. This is just about to drop. So you can actually look on Amazon. You can pre-order the book. It's coming out very soon. So that's coming out. We've also got an episode with Carrie Jo and Anna from the Heretical Hippies podcast That's going to be coming out. And I had a conversation with Tia Levings. She's the one who was, of course, the video went viral on TikTok, the Fundy Baby Voice video, and she's got a new book coming out. So that's going to be coming out probably closer to July. But we've also got my good friend Dean Crosetz. We've got Ryan George. We got Marissa Hackett. So we've got a lot of episodes queued up in the pipeline. So these are all coming out very soon in the next few episodes of the Dismantling Doctrine podcast. And I would mention, too, thank you to our newest Patreon supporter. Thank you to OG Narwhals, who now has the distinction of being the very first supporter of the newly named Dismantling Doctrine podcast. And you can find that at patreon.com/dismantlingdoctrine. So that's the same page, but I've got a new URL for it because I renamed the title of the show. So let's get on back into the second half of this conversation with Jenny Cohn, looking at this hugely important topic of unmasking Project 2025, a threat to American democracy. I keep coming back to a prediction that Matthew Taylor, and I think you cite him in your article, maybe he's in the Politico article, but we talked about some of this stuff, the Christian nationalism, dominion theology on a podcast not too long ago. And I said, what's your prediction of the 2024 election? What do you think is going to happen? And I've said this in numerous podcasts, but it's a good reaction. He says, number one, okay, Trump wins the popular vote, the electoral college, and then that's, you know, dictatorial and fascist and all authoritarian and all that. That's bad. Right. Or Biden wins the popular vote and the electoral college, but Trump doesn't accept those results. Therefore, there's violence. Or it's so close that it ends up going to a counselor like the Bush-Gore thing. And if it ends up at the Supreme Court, Trump has stacked the deck there. So they could stop the count, as it were, when he's ahead, just like they did for Bush, and he will be the winner. But either way, you're going to be looking at potential violence no matter which way you take it, unless Trump wins. Then he won't need the violence because he'll be the winner. But then we'll be in a fascist state. So there is no real good outcome, I don't think, to any of this. What's your thoughts? Is that a fairly accurate prediction, would you say, as far as what could happen?
Yeah, I think that's a very accurate prediction.
It's scary. It literally is, because what struck me about it was there ain't a good scenario in any of those three. Because Biden could win, but they won't accept it. You know, and we'll see. Like you said, it won't be just January 6th. They can't be so stupid as just storm the Capitol and hope. You know, because I was talking to another guy on a podcast, and he said, what would have happened if they'd have succeeded? We never think about that. What if they had actually been able to, quote, unquote, overturn the results of the election? Let's say Pence tried to do it and whatever, and Trump stayed in office. What then?
Well, and the thing is, this philosophy of overturning an election result they disagree with is rooted in the idea that they claim that Trump is God ordained. And therefore, if he loses, it must have been Satan who was behind it. And that means there must have been fraud. And whether they can prove it or not is a point, because obviously, if he's Christ ordained. But it also ties back to this doctrine called the doctrine of lesser magistrates, which I only found out about recently. And it's in that statement on Christian nationalism, which I found and reported on. And the idea is that so-called lesser, some people who are elected to office but are maybe like sheriffs or governors. So this applies, for example, what happened in Texas. This was a lesser magistrate situation where they claim that they're not required, if they disagree with a ruling from a higher civil authority, so like from the courts or the president, that they're, if they decide that that higher ruling is unbiblical, according to their interpretation of what's unbiblical, then they are not only allowed, but in some situations required to disobey that ruling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of sounds a little bit just like civil disobedience generally, but it's really taking it to an extreme and to extreme situations. And this was kind of what was in play with all of the opposition to the mask mandates. And I feel like they were really preparing for this mass revolt, I guess, mm-hmm. because they claimed that the guy who wrote the book sort of repopularizing this doctrine of lesser magistrates is a pastor named Matt Truhella. And his book has been promoted by General Michael Flynn, disgraced General Michael Flynn, retired lieutenant,
yeah.
disgraced retired lieutenant. General Michael
but who might be reappointed if Trump wins.
Well, it's talking about bringing it back.
Exactly. But this concept, I think they have used it to fuel things like the opposition to the mask mandates, the take back Michigan, those big armed protests. Mm-hmm. They also used it in connection with what's happening at the border, that supposedly that's unbiblical, what's happening at the border, and therefore they weren't required, the governor, Texas, wasn't required to follow what the Supreme Court said. And that's, I believe, teeing up the psychology for posing a Trump loss if he loses the election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a...
And it's expressly in that statement on Christian nationalism. They talk about the lesser magistrates.
It's very clever, isn't it? They've created a loophole for themselves already. It's like, okay, we're going to do this before. We're not just going to stupidly rush in there all pissed off and angry like they were last time, because it was a confluence. What I saw in the January 6th thing, like you said, you had the Christian nationalist piece, you had the far-right militias, you also had the Dominion theology piece, and you had the QAnon stuff that was, you know, running through the whole message of the January 6ers. You know, so it was all like a perfect storm, I think. But now, you know, that didn't work, obviously. Now, like you say, it seemed like they're planning much more carefully and thoughtfully whatever happens with this next election.
Yeah, I think they're mainstreaming this lesser magistrates concept. They don't always use that terminology, but they are mainstreaming that they're allowed to, that it's okay to for a governor to disobey the Supreme Court. And it's okay. So no matter what happens, they have to resort to force, and they're already mainstreamed that that's okay, because they'll just say, you know, this is unbiblical if Trump loses, et cetera, et cetera. This is what they said about the magistrates here. And I didn't even appreciate the significance of this when I wrote it. A woman who studied the lesser magistrates doctrine reached out to me after my article came out and explained it to me. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh my God. This is even worse than I thought.
It's even worse than I thought. It says, we affirm that lesser magistrates may and sometimes must disobey a lawless higher magistrate to obey God. And then it says, for example, lesser magistrates such as state governments, counties, and municipalities must disregard any order, statute, or ruling from a higher magistrate, such as the federal government, instructing them to allow abortion.
Mm.
So they give the abortion as the one example, but it has been the guy who has popularized it, again, this Trujillo, has used it. He used it for the mask mandates and for the border as well.
It reminds me of the sort of religious exemption laws, and that was another loophole, wasn't it? If you're a Christian owner of a bakery, we've seen this example, haven't we? And let's say a gay couple comes in and has a wedding planned. You don't have to bake them a cake, because you could say, oh, on religious grounds, I am exempt from honoring your sinful lifestyle, or whatever you want to call it. They would disagree with it, and you're not going to be prosecuted. There's been cases like that, haven't there, that have gone all the way, I think, to the Supreme Court. This is kind of a smaller case of that, isn't it?
Well, it's like taking that and putting it on steroids. So they would extend it to even people they don't come into contact with. So in other words, they want to prevent people from getting abortions. It's not even like with the bakery case, although I think that was a fabricated baker, right? But with abortion, they want to tell everybody else what to do. They want to affirmatively reach out and force other people. That's kind of what they're promoting. Force other people to comply with what they see as biblical. Mm-hmm. And, you know, abortion. So it's even worse than the bakery case.
Yeah. It's a case study. Yeah. Like you said, there's a case study that then leads to a much bigger precedent, isn't it? Well, look at Texas.
It's like a slippery slope. I don't really have... Yeah, they one of the big things that they did was that there should be an exemption in the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, for religious organizations who oppose contraception. The Heritage Foundation, which is the lead organizer of Project 2025, was very into that. And in fact, their president was the president of a Catholic college that decided to terminate all federal funding because they were concerned about that provision of the ACA. Mm-hmm. But this is taking that really to a much greater extreme, I think.
It's very clever. Well, we mentioned...
It's very clever. They can never be wrong. They just have to say that their Bible tells them this.
Their interpretation of the Bible. Well, we mentioned earlier, there's a Doug Wilson connection, because I was surprised to hear him come up in your article. And like I said, I've done a lot of work on Doug Wilson. One of the things was the book, The Case for Christian Nationalism by Stephen Wolfe. Now, apparently he's no relation to William Wolfe, but right. William Wolfe has promoted his book. There was a, I don't know if he called it a tweet anymore, but a post on X where he was like, I've never seen so many young Christian men excited about this new article. By Stephen Wolfe. And the Doug Wilson connection, one of the connections is that it was published by Canon Press, which is Doug Wilson's sort of own private publishing company. He doesn't own it. His son owns it now, I think, but it's part of his big religious empire that he's got up there in Moscow, Idaho. What can you tell us about the Doug Wilson connection to all this?
Well, what it appears, based on this statement on Christian nationalism, that there is an organized movement to coalesce around some very extreme principles for our government that are rooted in an extreme interpretation of the Bible and forcing everyone to submit to that. And as part of, they have conferences, just like the Christian right, the broader Christian right, they have conferences and podcasts and interviews. And so there's this sort of core to the group, and Doug Wilson is part of that group. He's not a co-editor or an author of the Statement on Christian Nationalism, and he probably has his own things that he disagrees with slightly on it, or how it's messaged or anything, but he's definitely an inspiration for the people in this movement, and he's their fellow traveler in this movement. And yeah, he put out the book that the case for Christian nationalism, which is very similar to the Statement on Christian Nationalism. The two are very similar in their application of principles. And the Stephen Wolfe book talks about lesser magistrates as well. Actually, like, he talks about lesser magistrates, but he does talk about Christ-ordained civil magistrates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's got this sort of messianic figure that, because that's the question in his books, like, well, if you were to put together a Christian government, what would it look like? And he's got sort of this leader, this figure, this Messiah type. And you think, okay, who's that? Is that the, when Christians do take dominion? Because, of course, the other piece with Doug Wilson.
Calling him a prince, right?
Yeah, the prince.
I've read about his book.
Yeah, I did a podcast. We touched on it. But the thing about Wolf's book is that, like I say, he's inspired by Doug Wilson. Because, of course, Doug Wilson's a major leading figure in the Christian patriarchy, biblical patriarchy movement.
Yes.
And that, like you said earlier, yeah, that was the other piece of the whole worldview of this thing.
Right. So there have been a number of good articles about Doug Wilson. I think Vice did a really good.
Yeah. Sarah Stacker.
It started out with Men Conquer and Women Surrender.
Mm-hmm.
And he also, his views on slavery are really grotesque.
Yep. I did a whole episode on that.
Sex marriage, that supporting same-sex marriage is far worse than supporting slavery. And it's not even close. He said that he has a blog that he does. I think he does it every November. And he wrote that on his blog. It's still there.
Yeah.
I think.
No Quarter November.
He's No Quarter November. Mm-hmm. And yeah, what's really shocking, it's he does not belong, that I have found yet, to an organization, one of those 100 coalition partners of Project 2025, at least not yet. But he runs in the same circles as the sort of the highest profile top leaders of Project 2025. And so I keep coming back. The Family Research Council is a major hub of the Christian right. And I think, honestly, Tony Perkins, who leads it, was one of maybe two Christian leaders who met with Trump the most during his administration. I haven't quantified it yet. I keep meaning to look into that. But I think he and Ralph Reed are probably the two who met with Trump the most. He's highly, highly influential. And he interviewed Doug Wilson about classical Christian education, because what's really horrifying is that Doug Wilson, with his biblical patriarchal worldview, is the founder of the classical Christian education movement that's really taking off in the country.
The big homeschooling thing, yeah.
The whole homeschooling.
Yeah.
The curriculum that's used in a lot of the homeschooling comes from Doug Wilson. And this guy who thinks that slavery was based on a relationship of mutual affection, I think.
It was the most harmonious society in the history of the world, you know?
It actually kind of shocked me to see Tony Perkins, who I used to think at least pretended to not be that extreme. I actually don't think that anymore. I don't think he does pretend.
Not so
in certain contexts, he pretends to be maybe not that extreme. But interviewing and normalizing Doug Wilson about classical Christian education. And so the Family Research Council, again, is a major Project 2025 partner, and they were leading really the charge to attack Heidi Prisbola for exposing William Wolfe's connection to Russ Voigt, who is a major Project 2025 leader. None of them even tried to disavow William Wolfe.
Right.
Not one of them. Instead, they went after her and claimed that what they're promoting is normal mainstream Christianity, which is just not true.
That's absolutely not true. So yeah, they attacked her.
Yeah, the Family Research Council has tweeted, and this is still up, that abortion is never medically necessary to save the life of the mother. And I mean, so that's kind of one of their little tricks they do. There might be exceptions to save the life of the mother, but as we saw in Texas, they conclude that they never apply.
Yeah, so in the cases of like rape and incest and things like that, the poor girl, woman, is going to have to give birth to that baby.
And you know who else has tweeted that abortion is never medically necessary to save the life of the mother? It's the president of Students for Life, which is an official Project 2025 partner. Leonard Leo sits on the board. Leonard Leo, like the big puppet master, sits on the board of Students for Life. So this is where we are headed.
Yeah.
If these people are allowed to take control. And I do think that if Trump is elected, he'll give them whatever they want. He doesn't care. As long as they continue worshiping him and continue to help him maintain power.
Well, what's scary was I was looking on the Project 2025 website and it said something like, I can't remember where it was, but it talked about the Heritage Foundation and some of these organizations. Trump already used their playbook when he was president before. And they're basically saying, look, you know, he was using our stuff already. So there's already a precedent for this, you know?
Huge. So, yes. So Paul Danz is a director of Project 2025. And there's another guy, I just did a thread on him.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot his last name. But McEntee.
Yeah.
Both of them Catholics. But they were sort of responsible for purging the Trump administration of people who aren't sufficiently loyal to Trump starting in about March of 2020. So as we're heading toward the 2020 election and Trump's popularity is tanking, he started to get, because of the pandemic largely, they start purging the administration of people who they felt were not sufficiently loyal to Trump. And these are the people who are in charge of interviewing people for a second, under Project 2025 for a second Trump administration.
Yeah, there's a lot of horrifying precedent. Well, I know we probably don't have time to get into it, but I had a look through the 100 organizations that have signed on to Project 2025. And you talk about a rogues gallery of the Christian right. I mean, starting with the Alliance Defending Freedom, the ACLJ, Jay Sekulow's, or I mean, on and on, Family Research Council, Focus on the Family, on and on and on. And I just like, I didn't know a lot of them, but I know a lot of the ones that jumped out at me. I thought, my God, I mean, 100 organizations have signed on to this thing. And like you say, some really extreme on the Christian right. So if people want to find out more about that, they're going to have to go. You can actually go on the Heritage.org website and they show you right there. They're not hiding who these people are they?
Well, they apparently deleted their published count of the playbook today because the court is hearing the arguments on Matthew Preston and everyone was like looking and seeing that, oh, they've got a fallback with Project 2025. I mean, I'm guessing that's why they did it.
Suddenly it's gone. But luckily, you've archived it in your article.
Archived it.
Yeah, there's no way they're. Yeah, it's getting.
Really unring that bell.
Yeah, the horse has bolted and they've left. But I know you got to go. But I was just going to ask you, what are your maybe quickly you can kind of go through it. What's your prediction? We talked about some dire sort of outcomes for the election. Do you think there's some positive? What can people do to combat this stuff?
I think that you have to look for the articles on Project 2025 and Christian extremism, Christian nationalism, and then share them with friends and family. And on the bright side, I think their agenda is so extreme that if it's exposed, I believe that they will lose. The MAGAs, the Trump people, I believe that they will lose. The challenge we have is making sure that most voters know about it because most haven't a clue. And unfortunately, the mainstream media is really, really, really far behind to the extent they're covering it at all. Yeah. I would definitely follow Heidi Prisbola. I hope people would follow me on Twitter and at the Bucks County Beacon. Heidi is at Politico. But you have to really search out those articles and then tell people about them. I do want to make one last point that I always forgot, which is one of the big things that the Christian right and these Christian nationalists have done in order to make headway, for example, in taking over public schools, was to accuse the left of and the LGBTQ community of grooming children. And at the same concurrently, what I think most people don't realize is the extent to which child sexual abuse has run rampant in Christian fundamentalist institutions, not just the Catholic Church, but also in the Southern Baptist Convention, which again is America's largest evangelical denomination. And this concept of biblical patriarchy, where the male figure is the authority and the wife and women and children both must submit without question, really you can see how that would foster an environment in which child physical abuse and sexual abuse would run rampant. And that's really the case. And, you know, if they are allowed to take over the sort of education system and people have to send their kids to their schools, I would be very concerned about physical and sexual abuse.
Oh, absolutely.
Occurring in those schools. And we've just been, they did this really remarkable deflection with their phony groomers campaign, which is a whole other can of worms.
But I know what you mean.
Keep in mind.
Yeah.
They definitely believe in using the rod to discipline children. That's in the statement on Christian nationalism explicitly, that we're allowed to basically beat up our kids.
Yeah, corporal punishment. And this is something that goes back to Bill Gothard and Dr. James Dobson and all that. I was raised in all
Michael
that. Michael
Ferris and the Alliance Defending
Freedom. Exactly. Homeschool.
They don't put Child Protective Services involved. They hate Child Protective Services.
Yeah, and they look at the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. That's basically, a lot of their efforts have been to safeguard parents from quote-unquote state, you know, old government overreach or whatever, into the home. So if a father or mother is abusing their children, the state can't go in there to find out what's going on, or the kids can't, you know. It's a shocking development.
And Doug Wilson is also one of the people who promotes that idea of physically disciplining your kids.
Yep.
And I saw something posted just the other day where he even said, how young should the child be when you start disciplining them? Well, you could flick a newborn who's nursing.
What?
But, you know, there's a video of them that went viral of his wife giggling as she talked about swatting, she put it, spanking her toddler, her son who was a toddler at the time, to 30 times because he wouldn't sleep.
Yeah, he wouldn't take a nap. Keep spanking the kid.
Part of evangelical culture, apparently, at least part, many people within that culture are into the physical abuse.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Mike and Debbie Pearl, I mean, on and on and on. There's a list of another rogues gallery of,
I wrote a whole book.
Oh, yeah. Dare to Disciple.
About eating up his dachshund.
Yeah.
Like this little tiny dog. And I mean, I should laugh. It's actually really horrifying. I'm a huge dog lover. It's very upsetting. He he beat up his dog.
Yeah, really? That's where we're going.
I believe.
Yeah.
He was using that as an example of how that's how you win against your kids.
Yeah, you break the will of the child.
So all of this, if people have a huge crash course because we thought we had separation of church and state, we do have it technically, but there was a whole army of people working to erode it and get rid of it. And, you know, we've been taught to think about political issues in secular terms and not criticize people because of their religious views, and that's all fine and dandy. But when they want to take over the government and their views are very extreme and anti-gay and anti-women, I think we have to speak up.
Yeah,
and
now we got
to win if voters know what's on the line.
Yeah, it's like the cockroaches, you know, when you shine a light on them, they scurry for cover. Because I'm reminded, we did talk about this, but, you know, Project Blitz, that was another one. You know, and then when Frederick Clarkson, I think he was the one who broke the story on Project Blitz, and they did not want that going public. A lot of it just went away right away because they were like, oh, shit, you know, we've been caught out basically doing this stuff. And now it's gotten national attention, and they panicked, you know, and it was like you said, they started deleting stuff and moving stuff around. And, you know, they still try, but it's not as extreme as Project 2025. But that's the best way, is to shine a light on it.
Exactly. They live in a bubble. And they go to all these conferences, and so they get this false idea that everybody agrees with them. Mm-hmm. And so one thing which I haven't posted yet, but there's an interview of Kevin Roberts, who's the head of Heritage Foundation, saying, who would have guessed after Roe's overturned that we'd start losing elections? They were surprised. He was
shocked.
Surprised.
I'm shocked.
I didn't see it coming. I did not see, he said, he did not see it coming. So, yeah, I mean, I think that they are going to, as they start realizing just how unpopular and toxic their views are to the general public, they are going to start covering their tracks. And they already started doing it with Project 2025 today, apparently.
Exactly. Well, go back to the George W. Bush era. That was the kind of the high watermark for the Christian right in the before Trump, I think. And yet there was another backlash, like you say, back then. And they seemingly haven't learned their lesson. They went too far back during the G.W. Bush era. And it was a big, you know, suddenly it was a Democratic blue wave. And they're like, I don't understand how this has happened. Well, you know, you guys are so extreme that the American people turned against you. And this is the same thing that's happening now, isn't it? Oh, well, I know we have to go. Remind us, though, once again, you said people can follow you on X. Where can they find you? What's your X handle?
At Jenny Cohn 1, JennyCohn1. And then I have a column with Bucks County Beacon. I'm on other social media platforms too, but I don't actually have my handles memorized, and I don't really use that much because I just don't have time to cross post.
Yeah, it's too much. But if people can find you on X, that's the best way. Well, Thank you so much, Jenny. This has been really informative. I would say frighteningly informative, but been really good.
You and I have really been on the same wavelength.
Like I said, our research is the same kind of stuff. We've done a lot of the same episodes. So yeah, thank you so much for doing the work you're doing. We'll touch base again. I don't want it to be like 2 or 3 years. I always say that, but we'll touch base again and see how things are going, maybe closer to the election.
That sounds good. Sounds great.